This is David Sobolov, voice of Depth Charge in Beast Wars, and you're listening to the Beast Unleashed podcast.
Welcome to the All Things Transformers, the Beast Unleashed interview pre-show. Joining me in this awesome interview is TFG1 Mike and
Hello.
Michael Wilson. Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going.
How's it going? Mr. Catchphrase. Anyways, today in the latest in the interviews, actually the second one of the week, we have David Sobolov.
Yes.
Yes. So, just basically we'll be asking a crap ton of questions. I made a special intro for the episode, which I think is kind of cool. It's kind of a cross between Beast Wars and all things Transformers. Obviously not every question is going to be tailored towards Depth Charge, but it'll be basically all kinds of random.
Yeah, it's very, very random.
Yes. This is what happens when you write it at 2 in the morning.
It's kind of like you turned into Blitzwing from Animated, his random side, and it's like, ooh, let's all dance around the maypole.
Or something equivalent.
I'm not sure what a maypole is.
I have no idea what he's talking about. That's why I said that.
Is that like a stripper pole?
No.
It's to wear G-strings?
There was a line in one of the episodes. What'd you say, Steve?
Look, even on an interview, we get it dragged down the rat hole.
Oh, whatever.
Well, Mike's the one talking about stripper poles. I don't know.
Anyways, no. There was a scene in Animated where Blitzwing in Animated has three different personalities. And his crazy personality said it transformed the crazy personality, and he said, ooh, let's all dance around the maypole. I don't know. Whatever.
Maybe Blitzwing had a G-string.
And it was purple.
Decepticon purple.
And it changed colors every time his personality changed.
That would be awesome.
Okay, can we get to the interview now, please? Because this is really...
Yes. And so basically we're minutes away from calling David, so... yes.
Okay,
I guess
so,
we will cut this off so we don't get any more wildness. We'll save that for TBU. And right after this commercial, you will be hearing the interview with David Sobolov. Welcome back to the Beast Unleashed and All Things Transformers interview with David Sobolov. First, we'd like to welcome you to the show, David. Hello.
Hello. Hello, hello.
Hello. So, what's been going on with you lately?
What has been going on with me lately? Well, the really exciting stuff is that I am going to Con, and I never go to conventions. This is only like the second convention I've gone to, and it's SlagaCon in October in Indiana with Chad Williams. Do you know about it?
I myself am not familiar with it, no.
I think I've heard of it. I've heard the name.
Well, I had a lot of fun at Icon 1, which was only 1 year. I don't think it happened after that, but it's been about 4 years since I went to something like this, and it should be fun to meet all the fans.
Yes.
Exactly. I'm doing other things. I'm doing a Guild Wars 2 video game, and I've been doing a lot of things outside of video games and outside of animation lately, doing some commercials and some trailers and stuff, and just getting to different things.
Awesome.
Wow. Yeah, I remember you at Icon. I think you were there with Scott McNeil.
Scott. Yeah.
And he
Scott is everywhere. Everywhere you go, you will find Scott.
And yet we haven't gotten an interview with him yet, darn it.
You haven't?
No. We haven't been able to get contact with him. We've gotten David Kay, Gary Chalk, and
James Corlett.
Well, try him on his Facebook page. You never know.
We have.
Yeah, I actually caught up with him at this year's BotCon and asked him about that, and he said, you know, it's really hard to keep up with all the stuff going on the Facebook page.
And yet you didn't ask him for an actual interview when you met the guy in person.
It was a good 3-minute recording with him. So, that, I mean, I think that's pretty good considering.
But life is all about opportunity and grabbing that opportunity when you can. You know that.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to start into some basic background questions to start it off. Starting with, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a place called Windsor, Ontario, Canada, which is physically south of Detroit. It's a very strange little anomaly of geography. But yeah, right there near Detroit, and that's where I was until I graduated high school, and then I started on my journey after that.
Awesome.
Very cool. What was it? How did you break into voice acting? Was it something that you decided to go after? What did you like? Is there some story of you as a kid? You always could do voices, or how did you get into voice acting?
Well, I was doing stage work. I had gone to the Neighborhood Playhouse acting school in New York, and I was doing theater work and musical theater work too. And some agents heard my voice in Vancouver and approached me and asked me if I would start doing animation. And I just kept doing it after that. You eventually in this business gravitate toward where they will pay you, and it seemed to be the most economically viable area for me, so that's where I ended up.
How did you transition into video game voice acting?
Well, when I moved to Los Angeles in 2000, the industry was changing. There was still a fair bit of animation, but it seemed that there were more and more video games that needed voice, and it seems to be an insatiable need for them. there's always something going on with video games. So I just started doing more and more of them, and at this point I've done almost 50 of them.
Wow.
Wow. How did you land your first voice acting job?
It was, you know what, I am going to look. I don't know why I can't remember this guy's name because he's quite well known. Someone who works, I think he had something to do with Reboot. Remember that show called Reboot?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking it up. His name is Michael. He gave me my first voice acting gig after this agent had signed me up. This would be about 1993 or 4. Not Michael Donovan. Well, I can't remember his name right now. But anyway, this fellow gave me my first chance with that, and I actually pretty quickly ended up in a series. I did a series in 1996, and it was called Vortech. I don't know if anybody remembers it. It was on Fox. And that was the first series role I had. And it was all up in Vancouver, all around just before Beast Wars. Around that time, I did other series. I did Sabrina the Animated series that's now being repeated on CBS on Saturday mornings. And I did Spider-Man Unlimited. That was
I remember you in that.
I think that was the first role I actually noticed you were in before Beast Wars that I'd actually seen.
And around the time I did Beast Wars, I also did RoboCop, which should have been big, I think, but some weird thing going on at the time, they aired it at 2:30 in the afternoon, and the kids weren't home from school. So I don't think anybody saw it. But it's on Hulu now, if anybody wants to look it up. It's kind of amusing.
Is it the animated series or the television series?
No, animated series.
Cool. Is most of your work local to L.A., or do you have you traveled back to Vancouver for voice work or anything like that?
I haven't. You know, it's technically possible to do it from everywhere, and I've certainly had directors all over the world directing me in Los Angeles. But since I left Vancouver, there's this human nature thing. People want to physically see you there sometimes, and I know that there was talk of some series work after I left Vancouver. Because I wasn't physically there, they like to know that they can call you up and say, get down here in an hour. And they don't want to have to pay for the remote studio stuff. So a lot of times you need to be in the same city where work is quite often, especially for animation.
Hmm. Is it, would you say it's more lucrative to stay in L.A. rather than Vancouver then?
Well, lucrative because of the volume of work. You know, there's just, it takes a lot of auditioning to book anything. So there's so much competition. And everybody's doing electronic submissions. Sometimes you might have hundreds of people trying for each job. So the more opportunities you can get, the law of averages kicks in. But in Vancouver, you might only have 4 or 5 auditions a month. But here, I might have 3 a day.
Hmm.
So that it kind of makes more economic sense. Although I do miss Vancouver, I do miss Canada, definitely. But I've enjoyed my time here, too.
What was one of your favorite shows, or let's extend that out a little bit and just say one of your favorite gigs, including video games and stuff, that you've been on in the past?
Well, and not saying this just because of the program that I'm on, but really the Beast Wars gig. I only did 7 episodes of Depth Charge, but people never forgot it. It's amazing. I get a letter or something every month, and people interview me still. I mean, you called me up, and it's been, 12 years since I did that show?
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty amazing that it has life like that, and I think that's everybody's goal. I mean, aside from making a living, if you're doing it because you love it, you want to have an impact, and it's great when people like what you're doing. I just thought of a story. It might be a little bit of a tangent, but this might be interesting. I'm doing RoboCop, and there was this part of the series where they talk a lot about, in this series, you know, his history and the fact that he was human and he had a family. And every time they do a RoboCop series, it always comes up that his family's in trouble. He has to go save his family, even though they don't really know that it's him. But he remembers it's him. Anyway, excuse me. I wanted to do a really good homage to the whole franchise. You know, I want to make sure that I was true to that and I was spending a little time. And one of the other actors looked at me. I wasn't spending a ton of time, but just a little extra care that day, just to make sure that everything was right. And he said, "David, it's only an effing cartoon." And I said, "Jim, it's got my effing name on it."
Yeah.
So it's always nice when you remember that. This is something I feel very passionate about. You guys love this stuff. We're doing it as a living, but we love performing it. You guys love watching it and love experiencing it. I have to be there for you. I have to know that I'm doing my best so that you're going to have fun. And if I'm phoning it in from Toledo, you're going to know.
Yeah. One of the funny things, really quick, just to digress before we move on, one of the funny things is you said that Beast Wars is probably one of your favorites. Honestly, there have been other podcasts that have covered Beast Machines or Beast Wars just overall. We are the only podcast that is doing an in-depth review of all 3 seasons of Beast Wars and 2 seasons of Beast Machines.
Wow.
Yep.
Cool.
What show or gig did you miss the most and wish you could have gone on longer with? I know you partially explained it with Beast Wars, but...
I don't want to keep coming back to Beast Wars, so I won't mention my sadness at the death of my character. But a lot of them. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, so which question are we on, Steve?
It would be yours on the video game.
Okay. All right. What video game posed the biggest challenge that you have been a part of?
I don't even have to hesitate with that. It was Call of Duty 4, and I was a lead role in that, Lieutenant Vasquez, and that was a scream-fest to end all scream-o-fests because he was constantly in battle, and we had special lozenges that numbed the throat if you get through the session.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
The video game screaming is different than animation screaming. You might have some isolated moments where there's some intensity going on, even in battle, in an animated series. But for video games, there's something that's happened with the people that are gamers, where they just expect more and more action, more and more action, to the point where it's almost impossible for the human body to create that much excitement.
Wow.
It really is hard. So that was the height of screaming that I've ever done. I've retired from screaming. I will still do video games, but I will not scream like that ever again. I was hoarse for 6 months.
Wow.
And I was happy that I even got my voice back.
Yeah, I would be too after that.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was a great thing. I even got a fan letter from a lieutenant in the Army saying he wished he could command his troops like that. So, you know, what an honor. It's like, wow. I had that much impact. But I got to be able to do this. I picked this career because I wanted to do it till I was 90. And if my only choice of voice is something like this, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Beast Wars, what interested you about that series? I mean, what got you involved?
Well, the initial interest, of course, is a job, but the actual character was really compelling. You know, Ace Fipke was one of the producers, and him and Elizabeth Carol Savinkoff were the ones casting, and they brought me in, and we had a really interesting audition process because they did this thing called layering where they just would talk about one aspect of a personality and this other aspect of his personality, and we just keep layering it and layering it, and we threw in the Clint Eastwood stuff and just sort of got to the point where the voice was the way they wanted it, and I got cast. And I remember the first day, they took me aside and brought me into a room and showed me a drawing of the character, and no one else had seen it in the outside world, and they wouldn't let any of the other cast members see it. It was just me. I couldn't keep it, and I had to go and do the show.
Huh.
That was kind of interesting. But yeah, I got into it much like I get into any other show, just a whole audition process. I never know what might have happened in history, but when they were casting Beast Wars, the first year's season, I was on vacation in Australia. So I missed it.
Oh,
I was called to go in and audition for it, and I don't know if I would have gotten a part. I don't know. But I missed out the first time, and I was glad that I was able to get squeezed in on the last season.
If you had gotten it on the first season, which character would you have liked to play?
Oh, Megatron.
Nice. Aim high.
No, I'm not going to reveal where. But somewhere in the Transformers universe, in the past, I have been as Megatron and actually recorded as Megatron once for something that never aired. I was cast in something else as Megatron, and I actually had to turn the part down for very complicated reasons. So I've come so close, but I've never got to play the Big M.
Did you ever pull Gary's finger?
No.
Yes, because
since you asked me that, I'm going to retaliate. Even though Gary didn't do that, I'm going to tell you a Gary Chalk story.
Okay.
Now I noticed in this, you guys sent me a recording today that was very interesting.
Oh, yeah, that was me.
You're probably going to mention this later in the broadcast, but
yeah,
it was as if Death Charge was SpongeBob SquarePants, and it was very entertaining. But if you listen to it very carefully, you will notice something. The word depth charge is very difficult to say clearly.
Oh, yeah, it is.
People say depth charge. But Gary would say deaf charge, like, you know, the guy couldn't hear anything. And if you listen, I don't know which episode it is, but this is a like super geeky thing, I think, to bring up. If you're a hardcore geek, you will find the episode, one or two episodes, where Gary addresses depth charge as death charge.
You know, you should send us on a mission for this.
Yeah. I can almost hear it in my head right now, too.
Yes.
And when you're in the studio, the actors don't direct the other actors. Sue Blue, one of the absolute tippy-top directors in the business, was directing us. You don't say anything. She's the director. You don't talk to the other actors about their acting. I could hear it. I was, you know, no disrespect to Sue at all. It's fantastic. But that slid by, that death charge thing. And you know, she probably didn't care because it was, you know, exciting action going on and no one's really listening to the minutia. But for some reason, maybe I was more sensitive because that was the name of my character. But I never had to worry about that problem because I never talked to myself. I didn't get that crazy. Well, I kind of did talk to myself, didn't I? Depth Charge did have monologues where he had an internal thing going on, but he never addressed himself by name.
Yeah. The recording was done by Steve as Beast Wars Megatron. He can pretty much pull off David Kaye's voice as an impression. The original idea came from Michael Wilson, though. He posted it on our website in one of our episode comments. And I'm like, oh, wow. That's nuts.
And it progressed from there.
Constantly amazed at what the fans come up with. I had a 14-year-old girl write me once talking about the fan fiction she wrote about Depth Charge. And without getting into it, I could never answer her her email because of the nature of the email, but she got grounded for a week for writing the fan fiction.
Ouch.
Yeah. That's the best kind of fan fiction. It's like, and I'm the main character, and, you know, it's like you wrote yourself into the fan fiction, did you? That's kind of creepy.
Well, she wrote it. She wrote this fan fiction, and it was something her mother didn't want her to be writing about, apparently.
Nice.
So, what were some of your favorite characters you've played in in cartoons and video games?
Outside of Depth Charge.
Yeah, outside of Depth Charge, of
Let's
course.
See. You know, what was his name? This character that I played. This is so embarrassing because I often, when I'm doing an interview, I have my website up so I can remember all this stuff. And, of course, as soon as I click on it, I remember it. Where is this cartoon that I did a few years ago? Hello, Warner Brothers. Legion of Superheroes. The Persuader. Yeah, I was going to call him the Punisher. The Persuader was great. That was a lot of fun. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but that was in season 2 of Legion of Superheroes. He was a lot of fun.
And yeah, I remember
the deliciously evil guys, especially. There was a video game that I did, where is it, early on, called Spawn. I was Malbolgia, and the delicious evil deepness was
You got to
really
play
fun.
Satan.
I did. I've done that a number of times in my career.
Huh.
Yes, and in DC, you get
there's
to play
a fair
dark
bit
side.
Of evil in my voice, apparently.
Yes. I think it's that you can hit that nice dark tone.
Yeah, that's what it is.
What
but
role
I often,
would.
I often giggle through the sessions because it's really not. You know, I'll do some really big, huge thing like I did in Halo Wars, the video mm-hmm. game. I was the Arbiter. And you just do this gigantically huge, deep thing and then just laugh because it's so far away from who I am. That's why it's called acting.
Exactly. Would you say that Depth Charge is the role that you're most identified for animation?
It's the one that's most remembered, that's for sure.
Okay. You know, what about video games?
For video games, there's a few. The Arbiter from Halo Wars, for sure. The Call of Duty role that I told you about, Lieutenant Vasquez, was quite a popular one. And what else would have been really popular? Probably what I did for Enemy Territory, Quake Wars. That was pretty well known, too. He called Sprague Infiltrator, but he had a very distinctive, weird voice. So if people remember that one. Justice League, obviously, I mean, I don't know how popular that video game was, but Darkseid, that was a pretty memorable role, too.
Yeah.
Did not play that one. Speaking of video games you were in, what can you tell us about your role in the upcoming Diablo 3 game, if anything?
You know, it's a mystery to me because I went in there for this one section that was a cutscene, and it was a really involved just whole scenario that was going on that's obviously super confidential, and I'm amazed they haven't released this thing yet. I recorded that 2.5 years ago.
Wow.
Hasn't come out yet, has it?
No.
As far as I know, Blizzard likes to wait until the last minute until they're 100% sure it's going to come out at, you know, the certain date before they release it.
I think the press for that has basically said, you know, everybody's bugging us, you know, when are we coming out? And they wrote, when we're ready.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's software
years.
To say. Yeah, id Software used to say when it's done. It'll come out when it's done.
Well, here's the thing. Video games cost a huge amount of money to produce. And, you know, it's just the years and years of work it takes to produce. And they do not want to release something that isn't great these days, especially, because it's just not worth the investment if it bombs. Because the lifespan of a video game, really, commercially, financially, is really only about a month. You get a month to 3 months, actually. A month to 3 months to sell the thing and sell most of your copies, unless it's a massively multiplayer game and, you know, and it lives on and on. But you gotta hit the ground running. It has to be a huge hit, or you're done. So they're not going to release it until it's amazing.
Hmm.
I loved working on Brutal Legend, too. That was a lot of fun. I don't know if any of you ever played that.
No, I've never played that, but I have played the Transformer movie game and the Unreal Tournament 3.
Yes, where I played Brawl.
And then Crawl and Unreal Tournament.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Alrighty. And how did you get the role of Depth Charge in Beast Wars?
Well, I think we kind of covered that. We talked about just the normal audition process, and then they just narrowed down and they decided to go with me. It wasn't like a phone call like, David, we need you. It was, you know, I had to compete for it.
You don't have like a red phone in your office that rings and...
Yeah, like the bat phone.
The bat phone.
I actually do. And it's all about call display these days. So if I see my agent calling, you know, I know that it's a good call. That's the bat phone. The bat phone call is when it says Atlas Talent there on my cell phone.
Were you a fan of the original Transformers before you got into the role of Depth Charge for Beast Wars?
I really wasn't that familiar with it. It wasn't something that was really my experience. I mean, that was like mid-80s, right?
Yeah, it was mid-80s.
84.
I was already 20 years old at that point. So not that, you know, adults aren't watching that, but I was when was I doing that? I was probably just finishing Neighborhood Playhouse, and I don't even think I had a TV. I was just concentrating on doing the acting thing and living in New York City at that time.
Getting back to Depth Charge, see, now we're all trying very hard to pronounce this properly.
Well, that's the key. You don't try too hard. Depth Charge.
Depth
Charge. Just say it and forget it.
I'm just going to call it DC.
Try too hard, you'll never get it. Hmm? What'd you say?
I'll just spell him DC. So, DC. That guy. How did you come up with his distinctive voice? I mean, it's very, like we say, Clint Eastwood-y, but what was the process there?
There was that layering thing we talked about in the audition process, but it was a full-body experience. You have to stand up to do it. You have to put all of the energy in your voice, and then I clenched my jaw a little bit to get it to work. And there's a lot of tension in the voice, yet a relaxed, mellow sound at the same time. It's just a combination of things going on. And I would usually leave a session with a bit of a headache because of trying to put all that energy into a small space. You know, he was never really yelling except when he said, you know, maximize.
Right.
You know, for the most part, he was pretty low-key, but really intense. And I think that was the key to the character, the intensity.
So even when he blew
the mellow intensity.
Yes.
He probably would have smoked marijuana, but they never showed that on camera.
That's because he hadn't grown it underwater yet.
Well, he surfaced occasionally.
There was the time that he was a boat for an episode, and he smacked Rat Trap with his tail.
Mm-hmm. Well, funny. Pretty much everybody played him. He's just he had a big chip on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any?
I liked the death scene. The death scene was fun. That was one of the best scenes I've ever done in my career. It's still on my demo to this day.
And it was an epic death scene at that.
It was epic, and I guess when you know you're being the series is you're leaving the series too. You want to leave with a bang. And I didn't. I thought there might have been another year of the show, but it turns out there wasn't.
I know originally there was supposed to be
the continuation to another show, I guess. Hmm?
I know originally there was supposed to be another year of it because I know they wanted to drag more of the Generation 1 Transformers into the mold. But it never. I think they just. Hasbro decided to change direction at the time.
I seem to remember at the end of the third season that there was a pretty much an understanding that there would be a next season, and then it just never happened.
Hmm.
I like the toy, too. The toy's fantastic.
I would have to say that's one of the better ones out of the Beast Wars line.
Had it on top of my TV set for years, but you can't put anything on top of a TV set anymore because they're thin.
Unless you have them hanging from wire in the air.
I guess. Well, I have one still. I used to have one open and transformed into the way I wanted it. But I have one sealed mixed box with the cast all signing it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool.
Nice.
It was out by the time I had finished, and on the last day I had everybody sign it. Everybody who was there. And Sue, the director.
Nice. See, I've got
I'll will
one,
that to some lucky person.
I've got a mint in box one packed up in the closet. But I have to say, I like the universe repaint, too.
Well, I will leave that to you to discuss, because I just don't know anything about it.
Okay, we're getting a little too geeky for David. I'm sorry. All right.
I love geeks, but I have to just sit back and smile and nod.
We've kind of talked about Depth Charge already, and you've kind of talked about him as far as his character, but overall, do you think that there was any character growth between the time he premiered or and up to the time of the death scene?
I think for the most part, he was spending the entire series looking for his adversary, and he was singular in that, and he had various interactions with different characters, and he wanted to be part of the gang and be a good guy, but the most important thing for him was making that kill. And confronting that guy. So that was really all that he cared about. So I really felt that that was his driving force. And there wasn't a lot of growth, per se. There was just movement toward a goal.
Hmm. Yeah, I would tend to agree, but I laughed so hard when he first premiered and he and the computer was telling him something about the High Council. He's like, slag the High Council.
Yeah, well, he didn't care. Yeah. He didn't care about the High Council. He just wanted to, again, do what he wanted. Yeah. And he was brought in, to try to help. But, he only kind of half-heartedly did it. He was still a good guy, but barely. I played a lot of characters in my career that were sort of half good and half evil. That's interesting.
Mm.
The Spider-Man Unlimited, if anyone remembers it, there was this part I played called Lord Tiger.
Yep.
And he was the not quite evil enough evil guy.
Yeah, I remember that. I love that show.
He ends up, it never aired, I don't think, because there were other shows that were really popular that year, and I think they pulled the show before it ran, but if you get the DVD, the last episode, he lets Spider-Man out of jail. He let them go. Uh-huh. And he's supposed to be one of the bad guys.
Uh-huh.
I kind of thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Had Beast Wars gone on for another season... And granted, if Death Charge hadn't died, what would you have liked to have seen happen with that character?
Well, it really depends, if he had been able to get Rampage. What if Rampage? The only way he could have continued is if he never had that fight with Rampage.
Hmm.
Otherwise. Well, the whole reason for him being there was that.
Right. Oh,
that was a conflict. There has to be conflict. You don't just sort of amble along. You have to actually have a goal.
Right. But so without Rampage there, he wouldn't have a point with him being there, or?
Not really. I don't think he would have stayed and helped. He would have just taken off and been a loner.
He would have never came there if it weren't for the fact Rampage was there.
Yeah.
Mm. Right.
Pretty cut and dry character, really, in the end. I think that's what made him interesting. He was very much kind of like a James Dean kind of type. Kind of a brooding, kind of a little bit sexy, a little bit angry, bad boy.
Now, do you feel this is aside from the other questions, do you feel he kind of filled the void of what Dinobot had the previous two seasons?
I think he was good in the mix of that season, because there's a lot of wacky comedic things going on, and, you know, super serious things going on. And he was kind of almost a realist in the middle of all that, I thought. You know, he was kind of the least cartoony of, and I'm not talking about performances per se, but I'm just talking about the characters, the way they were written and the way they were constructed. You know, he just seemed to be keeping it real, at least in my mind.
That kind of makes sense.
A different note. A different, it's almost like the whole thing's a painting, and he's just an important color in there, just like everybody else is. Huge cast, obviously. You know, they always kept it moving. And he would be thrown in, and things would slow down. You know, his speech was slower, and his consideration of things was a little more... He was annoyed, but he didn't act quickly, per se. He'd speak slowly and carry a big stick.
Yeah. Do you remember any, secrets from your days of playing Depth Charge and Beast Wars?
Well, the secret, I guess, for me, was that no one will ever know out in the public what it's like to actually hear all those characters come out of everybody's mouths in person in the same room when you're recording this thing. We had a very tight-knit group. Some episodes had 10 people in there, really close together, side by side, and I always stood beside Scott. And to hear that crazy stuff come out of his voice, come out of his mouth, you're thinking, this isn't even human. How does he do this? That was kind of the biggest fun for me, was sitting next to Scott, or standing next to Scott.
Especially with him doing 4 characters.
Yeah, and he could instantly change. You know, he's so talented. You know, and I kind of have a different approach in a sense, because I don't know what his process is per se, but he could just come up with character after character after character. And I come up with a character, but it takes a little bit of time for me to sort of develop it and to perform it. And I'm not the guy they hire to do 6 characters, although I did that once. With one video game, I did 7 characters in one day, but that's kind of unusual for me. I'm usually the guy they will hire for a lead villain or hero that's got this very focused thing going on. So I really appreciate the type of talent that Scott brings to the table, because it's nothing that I could do.
He's a good guy. He's really good at what he does.
He is a good guy. He's always been nice to me. Never heard a bad word said about him. Good guy.
Hmm. Were there any... have there been any, inside gags or anything while you've been in, various animation voiceover sessions or video game jobs?
Well, inside gags. You mean things that people do to each other in the studio?
Yeah, kind of like the pull my finger thing with Gary, but... You know, from anything, and not just Beast Wars, but I mean, is there any other stuff that you've done? Like, were there any gags during the Spider-Man records or anything like that?
I gotta be honest, you know, for the most part, there isn't a lot. I mean, there's fooling around in the session in terms of the performance, because they got to keep it light so people could feel comfortable and give amazing performances, but. These people have a lot of money invested in this stuff, and we're all being paid really well to show up. There's not a lot of time to fool around. They don't want it. You know, there's a little bit for a while, but then it's like crack the whip and keep going, because they have to get the session done in a certain amount of time. There's a lot of people there. You got a lot to get done. You're working. Having fun while
sense.
You're working.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, just from your, you know, the way that you describe your, the jobs that you do, it sounds like there's a high amount of integrity.
Well, I don't know if you're referring to me or just the whole process, but you got to show up ready to work. You know, there's so much competition. So many people would love to be doing what I've done. I'm so lucky. You know, I appreciate my life. I appreciate being able to show up and do this for a living. I am so blessed, and I want to have a good work ethic and show up and do my best. And that involves focus. You know, you want to have fun, but it's not playtime. It's a serious business. but a serious business that happens to be fun.
But when it runs long and you've had a 12-hour day and everyone's getting a little loopy.
There's
and
no 12-hour day in voiceover, ever.
No?
Not anymore. Longest, not since... Go ahead, David.
Not in the professional world. The union contracts allow for 8 hours on the first episode. And just to make sure you get the characters worked out and all that, it's never, ever, ever used. Usually you can get an animated episode, a 22-minute animated episode, done in 2 hours. That includes a rehearsal. And 4 hours max. If you go more than 4 hours, you're going to lose voices. Any professional setting does not book a voice actor for anything more than 4 hours, period, end of story.
And, Michael, you know this. You've met Peter Cullen in the Wally Burr sessions and all that. I mean, you know that that happened back then, and that doesn't happen anymore.
Well, I knew that it happened back then, but I didn't actually realize that it didn't happen today.
The last long session I did was for the very first video game I ever did in 2000 called Homeworld. And I think we worked about 6 hours. And I got overtime and all that, and they poured me into the cab. I've never, because if you are coming with your game face on and you're ready to go and you're giving it your all and you're not goofing around, it's exhausting. It's a lot of work. I mean, we hopefully make it sound like these guys are alive and they're really existing, but to make it sound like that, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of physical, at least for me, physical and emotional energy, especially for Depth Charge. I mean, after that death scene, I was wiped for the rest of the day because I just gave it, you know, as much as I could. But, that night after Homeworld, I remember going to bed at about 7 o'clock, and I didn't wake up the next day until 9 in the morning. I slept like 14 hours. I woke up a little bit, but it was as if I had been drugged or something. It was just too much. So this is kind of why they don't do more than 4-hour sessions, especially with the intensity that they're asking in video. There's no way.
Yeah. Wow. And again, I'm just really impressed with your work ethic.
Well, thanks. You know, I can't be the only one.
True. So, moving along. Who are your role models that influenced you for voice acting?
Well, James Earl Jones, the archetypal deep voice, which I was usually, early on when I would go into the studio, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but he used to do the, "This is CNN," and they would make me do that.
Oh, they didn't say, "Do Darth Vader." As soon as you walk in the door, they don't say, "Do Darth Vader."
No, they don't say, "Do Darth Vader." Well, if somebody asks me to do characters that aren't contracted, you know, if it's like out in the world or whatever, I'll do this. I got to put the phone down to do it, okay? And tell me if you think you know what I'm doing physically. One sec. Do you know what that is?
No.
That's a performing seal in a circus. I'm not a performing seal. I get this all the time, though. I get this at parties. I get this at gatherings. I get this in... I get this in grocery stores. It's like, oh, do a voice. Like, no. Here's my website. don't want to be a prima donna, but it's like, if you were a plumber, would you fix my pipes in the grocery store? No.
Probably not. So you're gonna have to bring your pipes with you.
Doesn't mean I don't want to be pleasant and talk to people and. It's just my thing. I mean, I'm sure some people would just do characters all day long. That's what they do. But, you know, it's just not what I do. Occasionally, if I'm feeling like it.
Well, I mean, to digress, you had mentioned that, you know, a lot of interviews that you have with, you know, job interviews revolve around, oh, hey, you know, we like that you have a deep voice like James Earl Jones.
Yeah, well... Usually I'm making up a specific character, but a lot of times in what they call the specs, you know, the specifications or whatever, where they talk about what they want, they'll mention a movie or they'll mention an actor, and hopefully you'll get it the day before or a couple days before and you can look it up and reference it. and that kind of gives you an idea of the flavor they're looking for.
Interesting. Yeah.
So
it's kind of changed over the years. You know, they don't really direct the way they used to in auditions. It used to be very much about, you know, in the moment, just create this, and which is, you know, still sometimes how it happens, but a lot of times there's that reference. You know, they kind of have an idea in their head of what they want it to sound like.
Mm.
And if you can give it to them, yee-haw. Or the opposite happens where they don't know it, they don't have any idea, and they'll bring everybody in, and somebody that wows them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there was a part that this I mentioned earlier. It's on CBS on Saturday mornings. It's Sabrina the Animated Series. I played this character called Spooky Jar.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted an Indian sounding genie. And I don't do that accent. It's not in my wheelhouse. But they had gone through everybody in town apparently, and they thought, oh yeah, David Sobolov. They just thought of me at the last minute, the day before they were going to record this thing, because they couldn't find anybody. And I did the audition, and the guy that was directing it was jumping up and down on the other side of the glass. Like, yay, we found our guy. But I didn't do an Indian accent. I just said to him, I don't do an Indian accent, but I'll give you what I think would be good. And it was based on Agnes Moorehead in Bewitched.
That's awesome.
The grandmother.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Nice.
And the spell she used to perform.
Yeah,
because he only speaks in rhymes.
Oh yeah.
Really?
No, Steve.
Well, I'll even do that character for you. It isn't too vocally. It's something like. Here's the thing with the voiceover acting. Unless I have the script in front of me, I got to think of words too. I don't normally have to think of words. I just think of a character. The words are sitting in front of me. Thou must answer questions three. Thou must answer questions three. You know, it was sort of low and lyrical and like a spell.
Yeah.
And it just sort of made sense that I would do it like her.
Nice.
Very cool.
Steve.
Yeah, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Who have you worked with in the industry that would that has been really cool to work with?
Well, I have to go back to animation days because video games are almost all done in isolation. Almost every single video game except Halo Wars is all by myself, pretending other people are talking to me. But, let's see. I'm going to go back on my own resume here and bring something to mind. Let's see. You know, there was a guy, and he's still my Facebook friend, named Jay Brazo. And he was on Sabrina the Animated Series, and he's got a long history of voice work and of on-camera work, especially in Canada. And just, again, I think it's work. Like, just the nicest guy in the world, showing up, ready to go. And just, the people I love working with the most are the people that are pleasant and the people that are down to earth. You know, it isn't, I mean, sure, I can be in awe of people's talent, but there's so many people that I'm in awe of, you know, just... Every time I go to the studio to do a group project, they're so picky now about who they cast. Everybody's amazing. So if they're amazing and they're nice to me, I love them forever.
We've kind of talked about this a little bit, but how was it working with Sue Blue, and what did you think of her voice direction?
Sue, and I'm really not blowing smoke, as they say in Hollywood, but she is my favorite of all time. She's, you know, not that the others aren't amazing. She is just so, so fantastic to work with. She engages with a huge amount of energy and gets the performers hyped up to just give everything you can to her, and she's got this wonderful positive energy. She loves what she does. She throws herself into it. She's not phoning it in from Toledo. I've said it before. She is as engaged. She is more engaged than we are. She's like, and she'll get us into a scene. She'll make up some words just to get us into it, or just talk about what's going on with the same excitement that you're supposed to have when you jump into it. She doesn't work as much as she used to. She still does on occasion. I haven't worked with her as much as I'd like lately. I have some, but I did Vortech with her. I did Beast Wars with her. and a couple of other guest shots. I did the Warner Brothers show that I mentioned earlier, the Legion of Superheroes with her, and love her to death. She's the best.
Yeah, that would be an interview I would love to do with Superman.
Oh yeah, she's hard to track down, but if you can track her down, yeah, she'd have a million and one stories for you. She's been doing this since I was a little kid, I think.
Any way you can get her contact, pass on her contact information to her?
You know, I don't even have her contact information.
Oh, man, where's Gary Chalk's number when I really need it?
Well, to be honest, it's always best, the way you want to ask for that is, can you ask them to call me?
Right.
Because, it's not fair to give out people phone numbers. You know that.
Right. No. And well, that's what I was asking. Is there any way you can, talk to her for us or, pass on our information? That's what I meant, so.
Hey, if I happen to run into her, I will definitely pass on your info. I can do that for you.
Awesome. Okay, where?
I want to say, you did mention that you still keep in contact with some of the people that you worked with in the past, but what voice actors from Beast Wars or other voice projects do you still keep in close contact with?
Well, so many are on Facebook now. It seems to be like voice actors that I work with in the past, it's going to be on Facebook, but I still know Elizabeth Carol Savinkoff, that was the computer voice in Beast Wars. We still are in touch. And Jay Brazeau, as I mentioned. And I'm on, it's funny, I don't really know if, I do know that Scott, I'm in touch with, even though he's got a million fans on Facebook, because he asked to friend me. So I know that was an active thing on his part.
Nice.
Or somebody that works for him. But I haven't talked to him in a long time. Not since that con.
That was a ways back. That was a smallish con, actually. Icon.
It was small but mighty. I sat there getting signatures, and I brought my Beast Wars Season 3 DVD, and when somebody asked me for an autograph, I asked them to autograph my DVD.
Oh, nice.
So I have a DVD full of fan signatures.
That is awesome.
Very cool.
Because I know they, when I watch that DVD, that it's all the people that signed it really loved me. Because they asked for my autograph.
I'm surprised that you haven't done like a BotCon.
All anyone has to do is ask. I would be happy to do it, but I'm only going to go if I am asked to go. I get asked for, I get asked to send messages or to sign things sometimes, but I have not had the pleasure.
I know one of the organizers for TFCon up in Toronto. Maybe I'll pass that along to him.
But hey, I got asked to go to this con this fall, and I'm going. And Slagicon 2010. Look it up on the internet. In Indiana.
That's actually down by Muncie. I want to say actually, Mike, that's down by Nightmax's mom.
Ah, cool.
Yeah,
Chesterfield, Indiana, near Indianapolis.
I might have to make the trek down there for that one.
It's going to be fun. I'm going to be doing a voice acting class.
Oh, nice.
Oh, awesome.
That should be fun. And there's going to be dinner with Depth Charge. They're trying to work on that now. And if my flight is late, it'll be donuts with Depth Charge. And if my flight is really late, it'll be drinks with Depth Charge.
See, now Steve wants to go.
No, I'll get there on time.
Well, actually, I'm up by Chicago. It's probably about a 2.5-3 hour drive for me, and that was kind of keeping me from really wanting to go down there. But you're making it sound very enticing.
It's going to be fun. I'm guaranteeing that I will have a smile on my face and I will be ready to have fun.
It should be, because from what I understand, that's a, again, like Iacon 1, that's going to be a smaller one. It's going to be more about quality rather than, you know, quantity. So it should be
and
really
Greg,
nice.
Who played Grimlock, is going to be there, too.
Oh, really? Now you got to go, Michael. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I've met him before.
He is great. I work with him on Halo Wars, and I run into him around town all the time. And if you go to really fast, before they change it, there's a 14-year-old picture of me on there.
Back when you had hair?
No, just after I shaved it off. Soon to be replaced by one with me in my lab, Gunner.
Oh. Actually, is that the one from your website?
The one from my website. I've been doing voiceover for so long. You know, I've stopped pursuing on-camera stuff many years ago, so I haven't had a headshot.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't really done a professional headshot, so I need to do one. People keep asking for it, and I end up sending this 14-year-old picture.
Nice.
We've got just a couple of random questions, then we can wrap this up. Have you been asked to do any newer Transformers-related cartoon work? Would you be open to the idea?
I'm very open to it. I've auditioned, but I have not been called in.
Okay.
Hmm. We may have covered this, but what are some of your favorite types of voice acting work?
I love the delicious villain characters. They are fun. I like doing some commercial stuff. You know, I was the voice of Liquid Plumber for a couple of years, and it's fun. And you might have two or three lines, especially if it's something slightly charactery, and you go in there and they have you do 20 different ways, and you never know what's going to end up in the commercial. It's always like a lot of fun to watch the commercial and see which take they used. And, you know, I like characters that are complex. There was this one video game, and I'll go back to my website again. It was an anime thing from Japan that they translated in English. Rogue Galaxy. It was a Sony thing. And the character was so complex. He was a soldier, but he had quit because he was an alcoholic, and he had all sorts of just personal issues, and he was in love with the woman who ran the bar that he would go visit. And in a video game, it's just so cool to have something that's that complex. I think the more human the character, the more fun I have with it, the more that it sort of deals with human emotions and interactions.
And finally, our last question. Do you have any advice for people who aspire to get into voice acting?
Well, the traditional advice is, you know, I'll just tell you what the traditional advice is, but it's not necessarily my advice because I don't want to be negative ever. But, here's the positive thing. Don't ever let anyone squish your dreams. If you want to do it, you should do it. It's very hard to make a living doing voice acting. Traditionally, your parents, what I was going to say to begin with, traditionally your parents or even people in the business will say, if you can do anything else with your life, do it. I know when around New Year's, a lot of people call Screen Actors Guild and they call Actors Equity unions, actors unions, wanting to be an actor and asking that same question. And almost always the response they will get is, if you can do anything else, do it. But if you love it and it's your dream, you want to take acting classes. You want to do improv especially so that you can be ready to do anything they throw at you. In your town, wherever you are, you know, if you're a teenager, do community theater. If there's an improv troupe, work with them, but community theater is great. And know that eventually, if you want to do this with your life, you're going to have to, in the States, live in New York or Los Angeles, especially Los Angeles, because there just isn't enough work to sustain you anywhere else. And in Canada, it would be Vancouver or Toronto. Mm. And just have fun with it. Don't do it to make money. Do it because you love it. And the money will come.
All right.
Yeah.
We would like to thank you once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with us this evening.
You are most welcome. Thank you for thinking of me. And I will throw in a plug one more time for Slagicon. Everybody get to Indiana and say hi.
As far as people being able to interact with you on the internet, how can they go about doing that? You want to give out your website or your Facebook or anything like that?
I think my website is best. I'm probably going to start very soon a fan site on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm going to have two separate accounts. I'll have one for people that I know in person that are in my personal life, and then another one for fans. I've noticed lately a lot of people are starting to want to say hi to me, and I would rather kind of separate that, and then I can talk to them like fans, you know, just
right.
Answer their questions and stuff. So look for a fan page on Facebook fairly soon, but for now, my website's a great way to reach me.
All right.
And I'm happy to get, if people have questions or they want to say hi to me, I'm more than happy to answer email via my website. It says, you know, if you want to book me, you know, press a button here, and it actually goes to me first. So that's the big secret of my website. I screen for my agent. So I'm happy to talk to people.
All right, so if you'll just hang on the line 1 second, we are going to go to the outro.
Who lives in a colony under the sea? Depth Charge Fish Pants. Who wants to kill Rampage for you and for me? Depth Charge Fish Pants. Whose matery goodness is misunderstood? Depth Charge Fish Pants. Who sounds like Batman and Clint Eastwood? Depth Charge Fish Pants. Ready? Depth Charge Fish Pants. Depth Charge Fish Pants. Depth Charge Fish Pants. Excellent. Yes.
Wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,